You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media, Heather Vail, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to The Political Fix. It is October 1st, if you can believe that. How the heck did it become October already? I have no idea. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay Amernick's a strategic planner who helps his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. And he's also the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their business in the U.S. He also has a development lab that creates smartphone apps and inventions. What the heck was that? I think that was Rick Raddatz popping
Rick was
in there.
Heckling my introduction.
I'm just wondering, how many Israeli companies want to expand into Nevada? Is there enough desert in Israel? They want more desert?
He's convincing them to.
Yeah. Okay.
And Rick Raddatz
should be here.
Rick Raddatz is a professional heckler, serial entrepreneur, and internet marketer. With a degree in philosophy. Woohoo! What do you do with a degree in philosophy? Well, what he did is come up with a political development that he calls the solution, and that solution is to cap and prioritize government spending. I'm Heather Vail, also known as The Unwrapper. I'm an interviewer and journalist in all media. Guys, welcome to the show today.
Hello.
Hey, how are you, Heather?
I'm good.
We are a little giddy today, are we not?
Well, yeah, I think it all started with the fact that, believe it or not, usually at this time of year, October, it's usually still pretty summery outside in Las Vegas, but this year, for some reason, it's getting a little nippy out there. What's going on?
I don't know.
How did we go from 110, like last week, to, I don't know what it is, 70?
I don't know, but I find it very disturbing.
Very disturbing.
I got to work on my tan. I was at least hoping to be able to work on it through October, you know.
Yeah, well, usually you can count on wearing shorts and short sleeves all through October.
Yes.
At least until mid-October, but usually all the way through October. Now it's like, no, not so much.
Yeah, I know. It's a shame.
Yeah. And so we've had a prediction from a mutual friend that we're having snow this year. Because apparently when it gets this cold this early, that means we're having snow. And it usually only happens every 10 years. This time it's only been 6 years. However, the prediction is for snow. Jay, well, thoughts?
This is Las Vegas. Does he want to make book on that?
Probably not, but knowing him, probably not. But the rest of us could.
Let me just say, in general, I don't think so. But I will say this. The way things have been going this year, I'm saying anything's possible.
What, after the summer of Jay, anything's possible?
Pretty much.
What? How is that relevant?
It's not.
What
I'm saying in general, I'm saying the logical Jay, the wise mind Jay is saying, probably not. But then the sort of, you know.
Okay, but why do you say probably not? You know that usually at this time of year, it's much hotter than this. And now you're saying, okay, it's cold. There's already been snow on Mount Charleston that we can see from a distance. But yet, we're not going to get snow in the valley. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying probably not. That's
why?
Not,
no. What's your scientific basis for saying probably not?
We still live in a very dry and arid climate.
His leg is itchy.
Okay, you know what? I think we should have an informal bet. We won't take it to the book, but an informal bet between you and Roger, and we'll see who's right.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we'll figure out some kind of prize at the end. I'm betting on Roger, just saying.
Well, of course.
Just saying, I'm on Team Roger.
Yeah, you are. So. I was on Team Roger, too.
I was
a big supporter of his.
You were, now you're done.
And his efforts.
Now you've gone over, you started your own team. All right, so, Rick, how's it going in Colorado? You got any snow yet?
No snow. My wife is in France with her mom doing the museum tour, which I'm glad to avoid.
Sounds fun. I would
no,
love
Oh, my goodness. Oh. It's a senior museum tour. It's even slower than average. So I'm here at home with the kids doing politics. So there you go.
Okay. Well, museum tour sounds much more fun. In France!
I'm
in France!
I'm on Team Rick on this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good move. Good move staying back.
The only way to make a museum tour worse is to have it be a senior museum tour, which goes slow.
Well, okay, that part is true. That part's true. But your wife is not a senior. What's her name?
Amanda. But she is
Team
with
Amanda.
Her mom, who is a senior.
Team Amanda.
Yes. Yeah. Well, my wife loves it. So, hey, have fun, you know.
Yeah.
So she loves it, and I have fun with the kids. It's great.
Some of the kids?
I have fun with the kids.
Oh, fun with the kids. Gotcha. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So, Rick, let's talk about the solution. This is something you came up with because you've got this degree in philosophy, and somehow you've decided that you have a solution to the world's problems. Let's hear it.
Well, here's the deal. Every other philosopher studies books, and they study each other's philosophers' works, and they solve nothing. I decided that if the answer wasn't in the books and the answer wasn't in the experts, maybe the answer's in the people. So I started talking to people on the left, people on the right, people in the center, and I just kept talking. And what the people added was a lot of variety of ideas, and then what I added as a philosopher is discipline in thinking. And so the combination of variety plus discipline led to the solution, which very simply, as you mentioned earlier today, is to cap and prioritize government spending. The cap is going to make sure it's sustainable, at least, and that'll please the political right. And in fact, we can even force government to grow a little slower than the economy while maintaining purchasing power, which will even more please the right. But if we take that constant purchasing power and we prioritize it, meaning we constantly rank the spending from top to bottom so that the lowest stuff falls off every year, then we can look towards constantly improving government spending. And the transparency will force the government to help people who need help most and help them in ways that actually help them best. And as that competition continues over the years, we'll end up with a government that gets better and better at helping people as it becomes smaller and smaller percentage of our economy. So in the end, the political right gets the limited government they want, the political left gets the social justice they want, and the political moderates get the slow, gradual change towards a fiscally conservative, socially progressive government. So there you go.
So capping pleases the right but annoys the left, and prioritizing pleases the left but angers the right. Is that what you're saying?
You can look at it as pleasing everybody or looking at it as annoying everybody. It works either way.
Which usually means you're doing the right thing, by the way.
Yeah.
But also, I'll say, I don't think that prioritizing actually angers... prioritizing actually angers the left more than it angers the right.
So everything angers the left.
Yes, it does.
Capping
the right...
and prioritizing angers the left. So there's a right solution.
Jim makes a good point here that the political right, they talk about wanting a cap on government in a lot of different ways. And if you actually achieve that, okay, if you actually do cap government properly as the right sees it, then what else can you do but fight over priorities? So to the political right, cap and prioritize is not really even a new idea. It's kind of implied by what they've already wanted. They just haven't really announced step two, which is prioritizing. But on the political left, they think a cap hurts the government's ability to help people. So they're against the cap, largely. They want more funding from the especially the political rich, or I mean the rich in capitalism. And then to the activists on the left, the idea of prioritizing spending more transparently, apparently that's kind of scary because their movements depend largely on government spending not being so prioritized. But it turns out the people on the left, the actual voters, in large numbers, and we have polls that show about 77% support here, believe that government spending should be prioritized. So really this is about a marriage between fiscal conservatives across the spectrum plus social progressive voters. And it's like in politics always, it's kind of a weird marriage. It's kind of a tossed salad, if you will, in terms of the political spectrum. I can merge like four analogies in there. And so the elephant in the room is cap and prioritize.
Okay, is it a pink elephant? It's a pink elephant, Jay. Go for it. What do you have to say about this?
I'm still going to go over tossing salad. Okay, so You know, it's an interesting. You know, Rick brings up an interesting concept, and again, also the idea of the left actually will eventually have to ask themselves, do we want these problems solved, regardless of who does it, whether it's government, whether it's a private enterprise, you know, a 501c3, or some sort of philanthropist, or do they just want government to fund it? Because they don't want the rich to have money. And I think there is that is an underlying concept. There is this attitude that somehow somebody else's success is not realized because somebody earned more money. And it's a completely false notion. But it's an easy thing to do. It's, again, we talked about it, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago, that this is how, you know, any kind of hate monger sort of comes to be. They go to the downtrodden, they go to somebody and say, you're not whole. The reason you're not whole is because of this group. Doesn't matter whether it's racial, sexual, economic, whatever it may be. And again, that's where the left has to do some hard thinking in this case and say, you know what, do we want the homeless problem solved? Okay, if the answer is yes, then does it matter if government does it, or does it matter if the private sector ultimately does it, or a combination of both? The answer should be it doesn't matter who does it as long as it gets solved.
No, I'm going to completely disagree with Jay there.
Okay.
really? Surprise.
Yeah, I am. Because part of the left-leaning philosophy is for government to do this.
You're actually agreeing with me. I'm saying the left has to ask themselves that question.
No, no, but the answer is yes. The government has to do it, and camp and prioritize is not about forcing government to be out of the social justice business. Just the opposite. What camp and prioritize does is it forces through competition, it forces government programs to become better for the first time ever. Really, right now it's easier to create a new program than it is to fix an old one. So we have lots of programs duplicating work, and none of them are producing the results that people really want. I guess you're right that question is going to be asked. And really, if you think back since Barry Goldwater, the political right has been trying to say how good capitalism is in the free market, and that message does not penetrate the left. That's not the question the left has, you know, is looking for an answer to. The question left is looking for an answer to is how can we as a society, meaning government, which is the institutions that society builds, how can we as a society help the people who need help most? And it's ultimately the answer is going to be about government helping them, but it's going to, and in fact, it's going to be about both. And if that's the point you're trying to get to, then I agree with you there. But it's not the, you know, right now the right says it's capitalism, hey, it can solve everything, and they're wrong. And the left is saying, hey, government can do this without being capped and prioritized, and they're wrong. And the only people who are right are we here in this radio show, saying the answer is to cap and prioritize, and through competition make government better, and then it's going to take a while for everyone to get that.
Okay, how exactly? So this all came from your mind, Rick. So I'm going to ask you, how exactly do you become all of a sudden the smartest guy in the U.S., the U.S. of A.? The most powerful country in the world, and you're the smartest guy. You're on top of the heap. How did this happen?
Yeah, my wife has other thoughts on this too.
Let's
the quick
get a man
answer
interview.
Is I am very clearly not the smartest person in the room or the country, let alone the room. The reason I have such confidence in Camp and Prioritize is actually because the logical model is so simple. Individuals exist, governments exist, politicians exist, foreign nations exist, the future exists, and each of these things I just mentioned, these five things, you know, they all have resources. Individuals have resources, governments have resources, politicians, you know, the political power that they have is a resource. Foreign nations have control of resources, and we want to leave resources for the future. And so nobody with a brain that's working should disagree on those five facts, that those five things exist and they all control resources. But the next step is the thing that's amazingly simple, and yet we haven't done it as a race yet. Humanity has not figured this out. three of those five resources, we figured out how to economize through competition. And two of them we haven't. Okay? So capitalism is the competition of individuals in terms of who has what, right? Okay, that's individual resources. That's the economizing of individual resources. Democracy is a competition between politicians about who has power, and through competition that constantly improves, and that's democracy. And with foreign resources, by us having a strong national defense diplomacy, we're getting other nations to think twice. It's a form of competition about how they use their resources so that they end up using them in alignment with us. So we are economizing foreign resources. So humanity has economized three of the five resources. But we haven't economized government resources. We haven't made government spend better. We've only made it spend more. And so economizing government resources, that's what cap and prioritize is all about. It's that simple. And cap and trade, which the political left gets, is about economizing future resources, making the best use of the resources we have now so that we can leave more for the future. So it really is simply five economies, and we've only done three of the five. And so my confidence comes from the simplicity of that model. No one disagrees that there is these five, decision makers in the world. No one disagrees that there's those five types of resources. And yet we haven't thought the next step, which is, you know, should we economize them? Yes. And we're only economizing three of the five.
Okay. All right, so let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have the top story, and we'll continue this kind of discussion throughout the show. So we'll be right back with you on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Before the break, we were talking about the solution to cap and prioritize government spending and how Rick is not the smartest guy in the country, but he is the guy who came up with the solution. So, guys, do you have any final commentary on what we were talking about, or should we go into the top story?
Top story.
All right. This is what everyone's talking about this week. This is actually a top story among society as well as on this show. The first case of Ebola diagnosed in the U.S. has been confirmed in a man who recently traveled from Liberia to Dallas, sending chills through the area's West African community, whose leaders urged caution to prevent spreading the virus. The unidentified man was critically ill and has been in isolation at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital since Sunday, according to federal health officials. They would not reveal his nationality or age, though, when they released this information yesterday. Authorities have begun tracking down family, friends, and anyone else who may have come in close contact with him and therefore could be at risk. Officials said there are no other suspected cases in Texas, just this one. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Director Tom Frieden said the man left Liberia on September 19th and arrived the next day to visit relatives and started feeling sick about 4 or 5 days later. He said it wasn't clear how the man became infected. Now, it's possible that someone who has had contact with the man could develop Ebola in the coming weeks, but the CDC says that they will stop it from spreading further. Meanwhile, Stanley Gay, who's president of the Liberian Community Association of Dallas-Fort Worth, said the 10,000-strong Liberian population in North Texas is pretty skeptical of the CDC's assurances, just as Rick is, because Ebola has ravaged their country. So they're telling people to stay away from social gatherings, which are actually a prominent part of Liberian culture. Ebola symptoms can include fever, muscle pain, vomiting, and bleeding, and can appear as long as 21 days after exposure to the virus. The disease is not contagious until symptoms begin, and it takes close contact with bodily fluids to spread. Four American aid workers who became infected in West Africa have been flown back into the U.S. for treatment after they became sick. They were treated in special isolation facilities at hospitals in Atlanta and Nebraska, and three of those four have recovered. A U.S. doctor who was exposed to the virus in Sierra Leone is also under observation in a similar facility at the National Institutes of Health. The U.S. only has four of these isolation units, but they say that virtually any hospital can provide the proper care and infection control. So the man, who arrived in the U.S. on September 20th, began to develop symptoms last Wednesday, and he went to get care at the hospital 2 days later. They released him, though, because hospital officials didn't know that he had been in West Africa. Apparently no one asked, and he didn't tell. So he returned again a few days later when his condition worsened. Since the summer months, U.S. health officials have been preparing for the possibility that an individual travel could unknowingly arrive with the infection. Health authorities have advised hospitals on how to prevent the virus from spreading within their facilities. Passengers leaving Liberia also pass through rigorous screening, but those checks are no guarantee that an infected person won't get through, because airport officials would be very unlikely to stop someone who's not showing symptoms. Liberia is one of the three hardest hit countries in the epidemic, along with Sierra Leone and Guinea. Ebola is believed to have sickened more than 6,500 people in West Africa, and more than 3,000 deaths have been linked to the disease, according to the World Health Organization. But keep in mind that those numbers are probably underestimates, partially because there aren't enough labs to test people for Ebola. So there you have it, guys. There's the top story. A potential epidemic in the U.S.? We do not know yet.
Well, actually, I think the real top story here is that Rick has something in common with the Liberian community of West Texas.
His skepticism. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Skepticism of the CDC.
We should go to them and see if we can get them on board with Captain Prioritize.
that's a lot of people to get on board, rather, right?
but in all seriousness, this is obviously scary as the dickens, I'll quote Planet of the Apes, where there's one, there's another. So just because there's one case, there's going to be another, and there's going to be another after that.
It depends if he was in close contact with anyone.
No, it depends, because we continue to have flights coming in from West Africa. There are other countries that will say, this is a country B is a disease-ridden place, and we don't want that epidemic in our country, so we're halting all flights from there. And I don't know that that's not a terrible idea till we figure out exactly what to do. I mean, it seems we're ill-equipped to deal with it.
Now, they say we're fully equipped to deal with it.
No, they don't. They say they only have
CDC,
four isolation.
No, the CDC says that virtually any hospital can provide the proper care and infection control, and they've trained the hospitals to do so.
Well, then why are there specialized isolation units for Ebola? If any isolation unit will do, that doesn't make any sense.
That's above and beyond the hospitals.
Well, if it comes to protecting me from Ebola, I want to go above and beyond. I don't want
So we'll put you superior. We'll put you in one of the four isolation units, and no, the isolation units seem to be they were created for people that were specifically being brought back because they had been infected over there. They didn't want to just stick them in regular hospitals. However, if someone has the symptoms and goes
they
to a regular
stick
hospital,
in a regular hospital, which they claim is fully adequate to deal with it, that is.
No, they were taking extra
precautions. There is a useful four-letter term to describe what that is.
They were going above and beyond, which you said that you would prefer. But with the average person walking in, they're not going to fly them to one of these four places. They're going to treat them quickly and efficiently where they are, because it doesn't make sense to fly everyone to these isolation units.
I'm a big fan of the CDC, but I don't know that they fully know what they're talking about here. I'm not fully confident that they are experts on an Ebola outbreak in the United States. And I'm a little worried.
Okay, so who would be?
Nobody, because they for whatever reason they didn't focus on it. That was a problem over there.
If they weren't focusing on it, why do they have these four isolation wards?
Well, it wouldn't be just for Ebola. To be frank,
no, it is. It is.
What's the difference between an isolation unit for Ebola and an isolation unit for the bubonic plague?
I think these were created for 500 Ebola. Years.
No, there are still cases of the bubonic plague.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not widespread, but it's still highly contagious, and I don't know. Okay. I have concern. And I'll leave it there. I don't know. I mean, what can be done other than stopping flights from West Africa?
But they don't really need isolation units for the average case if they are preventing that person from exchanging bodily fluids with anybody. So, I mean, it's no easier to spread than AIDS. And you remember how people were scared when AIDS first came and, oh, I'm going to get AIDS by sharing cutlery, or I'm going to get AIDS by, you know, shaking hands. And
AIDS is very difficult to get.
Right.
They haven't said, they said sharing bodily fluids or being exposed to bodily fluids. So is that using the bathroom in the airplane after a guy who was infected? Is that sitting next to him and he sneezes? I don't know.
No, not sneezes. No, well, they actually
that's
said.
That's a bodily fluid. Mucus is not a bodily fluid.
I took out the part about the airplane because I had to shorten the story down. However, they said that no one that was on that airplane would be in jeopardy because he was not showing symptoms at the time. He did not get sick until several days after he got back. And remember, it can take up to 21 days. So, well, are you an expert on this disease?
No, but also they're trying not to, incite a widespread panic. Nor do I think there should be a widespread panic, but I think there should be some
I think
level
I think
of
you like widespread panic. You like panic.
I'm anti-panic.
You're a panicker.
I'm opposed to panic.
You're a panicker.
I'm not a panicker.
Maybe
I'm a panicker, but I'm opposed to widespread panic.
Oh, okay. That's
if
good.
I can contain it within myself.
Okay. So, Rick, what do you think? Did we lose Rick?
I think he froze.
I'm also on the Hangout. Can you hear me on the phone?
Yeah,
yes.
I heard the phone.
Yeah, Hangout's having problems for me, although my internet connection is still clearly up because my phone is still up.
Yeah.
So who knows? Let's see. So I think the CDC are the right people. There's no one better, I believe. I think the CDC is a good example of the proper role of government. We need some kind of agency at this level to run things, both here in the U.S. but also internationally. And the big challenge here isn't any one agency. It's just the social structures that we have in place. I mean, it's really hard for a country to say, no, you can't travel back from Liberia to the United States yet, and yet that's kind of what we have to do. What amazes me most of all is that this patient from Liberia comes to the U.S., starts getting some symptoms worthy of going to the hospital for, and doesn't mention, oh, I was in Liberia, could you test me for Ebola? He actually got turned away from the hospital the first time, sent back home, because he didn't mention his history, which is just amazing to me.
But it's also amazing that they didn't ask him, have you done any traveling recently? Oh, yeah, 2 days ago.
Two days ago, I happened to be in the most densely populated Ebola outbreak.
That part's actually reasonable because doctors are trained to look for horses, not zebras, when they hear hoofprints. Or not hoofprints, but hoofbeats. it's not usually the rare African disease that's causing the problem. It's just the flu or whatever. It may be showing itself a different way than normal, so it's not surprising that doctors in Texas or wherever were not on the hunt for Ebola,
even though they have a large West African community in Texas.
Yeah, they have it right. They have like an association of not just West African.
Yeah.
It was like,
well,
like 10,000 Liberians living there.
Yeah, just Liberians.
Just Liberians alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would they not ask? Why would that not be one of the questions when you're screening someone for flu symptoms? Have you traveled recently?
Yeah.
maybe they should add that question on.
I think we lost Rick totally.
Yes.
Okay.
Phone end.
We're gonna take a quick break. Hopefully we can get Rick back, and when we come back, we'll also have Inside Perspective with Jay Amernick. So we'll be back with you in a few minutes on the Political Fix. Welcome back to Typical Fix. I'm Heather Vale here with Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz, my co-hosts. We do have Rick Raddatz back. We lost him for a couple of minutes due to technology, but Rick, you were in the middle of saying something about the Ebola virus CDC. Do you want to pick up that thought?
I don't know where I got cut off, but basically the CDC are the right people to lead this effort. I'm not going to fault the agency for not being perfect, because the hard part here isn't the agency's lack of perfection. The hard part is getting people to do something different is really, 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 really hard. And so we're going to have people who are just, you know, they do things they shouldn't do. They travel to another country, even though they're, you know, they're coming from a risky place, and they do the things they shouldn't do, and then the thing spreads. And but here's what I do fault. I saw on the TV somebody from the CDC. I don't know if it was the head of the CDC or who, but someone at the press conference saying, you know, I essentially guarantee it will not spread. You know, I have complete confidence it will not spread. Behind, God. I'm like, give me a break. That is a political answer, not a CDC answer. The CDC answer should be, you know what, we're doing everything we can, we're doing this, we're doing that, we're doing this, and please do the following things yourself. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. If you come from Liberia, tell the doctors, et cetera. That's what the CDC should be doing. So whoever that was I saw on TV was the wrong person for the job for that one reason alone.
Yeah,
right.
I agree. Yeah. All right. So can you top that with your inside perspective, Jay?
My inside perspective is actually completely and utterly unrelated to the top story.
Okay, well, let's have it.
And it is simply this, is that you cannot legislate morality or virtue, but that doesn't stop ideologues from continuing to try. And the issue with that is both, sadly, are willing to circumvent the Constitution of the United States in order to do it. And then they both get upset when the other side tries to do it. That is my inside perspective.
Well, that was short.
Can I disagree right away?
Yes,
yeah, go ahead.
I completely disagree with Jay, more completely than I have ever disagreed with Jay ever before. You absolutely can legislate morality. It's not easy. It's not pretty, but it happens all the time, and it does happen on big issues and small issues. And it's a matter of, look, through propaganda, you can lead a people from being a hardworking, just trying to get along kind of people to being Nazis. Okay? That's legislating morality in the wrong direction, but it happened. And there's an example, you know, pick your morality, but there's examples on all issues and all sides. So we are constantly legislating morality, and it works. It works.
He's waiting for you to come up with an example from the U.S., Rick.
Yeah, I'm talking about the United States.
Racism.
Germany in the 30s.
Racism, civil rights.
That's not morality.
That
is going back. Actually, that's completely in tune with our Constitution and with the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal. And down by their
creator, but for a long time,
because it was screwed up because that wasn't implemented correctly, and they.
So how is that not morality? That is morality.
It is part of our Constitution. It is part of our Declaration of Independence, and it's part of the, and then furthermore, the Bill of Rights.
No, but here's the point, Jay. Things like Title IX for women's participation in high school level sports and college level sports, things like the Civil Rights Bill for more equality. Legislating certain things be in history textbooks and so on, the core curriculum. These are examples of training the next generation to be different than the past generations.
Okay. So things in textbooks usually goes against the Constitution. The people are willing to circumvent the Constitution in order to put their religious or socioeconomic beliefs in a textbook. Okay. Title IX, there were casualties to Title IX.
Oh, sure.
You know.
I admit it's not pretty.
So it
can be really messy. It can have side effects, but it can be done.
It can't be done. I'm basically saying it should not be done.
No, it should be done. It should be done. In fact, cap and prioritize. The whole point about cap and prioritize is to create.
There we go.
Okay.
It's
now, you, by the way, are a philosophical vigilante because you have no degree in philosophy, but you are taking natural law into your own hands. Okay, but let's have the debate here. Cap and prioritize is about spending better. It's about the structures that we need in government to force government to spend better. Well, what does that word better mean? It means morality. It means that we have a choice, and we choose through the structure to force it to be better, better, better. We are actually trying to improve the morality of spending. In fact, that's the whole left-right debate, is the morality of government spending.
But it's not morality. It is efficacy. It is what is more effective. What's the more effective way to spend money? And by the way, whose money is it? It is the people's money. So it's the government taking back the people's money.
People's plural, meaning collective money, meaning not your individual money anymore. Any entity, to be very general here, that has a choice, that is the domain of morality. So individuals clearly have choices, and so there's individual ethics and morality there. But I'm going to say that a collective, a government, a group of people working together, there's a collective decision-making process that is different than the individual decision-making process. An individual decides in their own head. A collective decides through communication through some structured mechanism. So a collective decision-making process is making a choice, and therefore there's a second dimension of morality. And I'm going to say there's a third dimension of morality, politicians making choices about what they do with their positions of power. There's a fourth dimension of morality, which is what foreign nations do. Because that's outside of the other structures. And there's also we, the species, what are we doing in terms of leaving a good planet for the future? That's yet another dimension of morality. So there are actually precisely five dimensions of morality, and it's really important to be specific in those five.
Right. The point I'm making is that when people try to legislate morality or what they call virtue at your expense, okay, I've decided that this book, Catcher in the Rye, is a subversive, scary book, and I don't want anybody to read it because it goes against my morals. That is what I'm talking about. Okay, and that does happen, and they're willing to circumvent the Constitution, which is freedom of speech, in order to do that. That is my point. You are talking on a higher plane and sort of a more ethereal, philosophical level. You know, obviously it's illegal to murder somebody. That is a moral decision,
Let's separate this into two questions.
Okay.
One question is, can we legislate morality? Another question is, should we? So what's your answer to both questions?
Okay. Well, obviously it can be done because it has been done.
Aha! Okay.
Okay.
Okay, I agree.
What I'm saying is when it infringes on other people's rights at the expense of other people. Okay, and it happens
all
the time.
So Jay is saying yes and no to your two questions.
Rick
is saying yes and yes, correct?
I'm saying freedom trumps virtue.
You're saying it can be done, but it should not be done. Rick is saying it can be done and it should be done.
I'm saying, can it be done? Absolutely, it can be done. So I agree with Jay on that. Should it be done is actually a trick question. Ha, ha, ha. The answer is not yes or no because it's unavoidable. Every law infringes or affects morality in one way or another. Everything. It's impossible to avoid. Therefore, it's not a choice. Therefore, it's not a should question. It's a will it happen or not question. And the answer is, as long as we're alive, it'll happen.
Well, that's true. I can't think of a law that doesn't have some kind of morality attached to it.
Well, it's when it, like, okay, so obviously stealing, okay?
That's morality.
It's immoral to steal, but the basis of the law is it's saying, this doesn't belong to you. You've infringed on this guy's rights by taking what is not yours and something that belonged to him. That's what that is. Now, yes, on a higher plane, that is a moral issue, but it's also, again, it's a common sense thing that you do not steal from somebody else.
Wait, do you guys hear that high-pitched beep? That beep, beep. I think that's Jay moving his argument backwards. I think that's what that is.
I'm putting a finer point on it.
Okay. No, I think it's a great topic, though, for discussion. And you know, to not beat up on Jay here, this is a really hard question that really, really smart people, you know, screw up on. And so it's no wonder that Jay has a problem with it too. No, just kidding. I was actually debating this with a philosopher who's a much smarter philosopher than me, just last week. And it's funny because the smarter you are, the more likely you are to trust your philosophical abstraction, and then it leads you to conclusions that are just weird and goofy. And that was the case with this guy, I believe. What I believe morality is, the primary form of morality is, what should I as an individual do? Okay? And I believe that question is really impossible to answer without also taking into account the society in which I'm living in, because, you know, what I expect from the other person's behavior and vice versa, you know, is dependent on the society that we're in, what agreements we've made, you know, the social contract, so to speak. But then as soon as we get into that area, that you know, so enormously opens up the discussion that we can never get back to individual morality again. So I believe that this pentanomic model that I talked about earlier, this five economy model, is really the superstructure that we have to get in place first. Once we have that in place, then the incentives on us acting in every level of society will be better incentives, and then we will act better naturally. So I think morality ultimately is about getting the incentives right. That's a more practical a way to approach morality than just saying, hey, we should act properly regardless of the incentives. Good luck.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Heather says, yeah.
Jay, do you have anything to add to that quickly before we take another break?
Only that's the first time I've ever heard the term philosophical abstraction and weird and goofy in the same sentence.
Well, that's okay. Me, but yeah.
All right. Well, we'll come back with more weirdness and goofiness in a few minutes when we have Rick's rant. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with you on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And we're at that time of the show where we get to hear some rants from a philosopher. It's what we affectionately call the outside perspective, because Jay Amernick has the inside perspective due to his experience working within the government parameters, and Rick does not. Rick's totally an outsider. However, he's got a lot to say, and he likes to say it, as you've heard already on this show. Now we're going to give him the platform to really go at it. Here's Rick's rant.
Okay, I'm going to rant against people who are unprepared for their radio segments. Like me, today, right now. I have no idea what topic to rant on. I've ranted on so much today. So I'd like you guys to just pick a word, pick a topic, and then I'll rant on it. Go.
Ferris wheels.
Damn you. Ferris wheels. Okay. Yes. I think I've got it. I'd like to... my focus is out of whack.
Yeah.
Hello? Hello? There we go.
It's kind
okay.
of artsy.
When I think of Ferris wheels... When I think of Ferris wheels, you know what I think about?
No.
I think about the fact that the cool ones don't exist anymore. The really scary ones that you thought would, like, fall over if you rode on them. But that's part of the fun. And why is that? Why is that? It's because government decides, you know what, that's not safe enough, you got to do X, Y, and Z. And so I think a lot of the fun has gone out of life because you just can't die as many ways as you used to be able to die. And I'm not sure how powerful of a rant this is, but you know what, I do believe people, if they choose to do their thing, they should be able to do it. And they shouldn't be able to sue the Ferris wheel manufacturer as long as they were advised up front that, hey, you know, this ride might collapse any moment, good luck.
Okay,
have
but
fun.
But they were not advised of that on any of the Ferris wheels that did collapse. And there is an understanding that when you go to ride on a Ferris wheel or any other ride for that matter, that there is a level of safety in place and you're not going to die. And the ones that they think you may get hurt, they actually have you sign a waiver. So if you're signing a waiver that says, yes, I know that this Ferris wheel might collapse, yes, fine. Mm-hmm. That argument is sound. However, if there's no waiver and they say, give me your three tickets, take a ride,
yeah,
people aren't expecting to die.
Right.
I guess what this ultimately is a rant for is personal responsibility. I would like personal responsibility to make a comeback, and I believe it will not make a comeback until government is spending as capped and prioritized so that we grow up knowing that we want to be responsible for ourselves in everything that we do, because we don't want to be so bad off that we need government help. You know, because government help will be there, it'll be capped and prioritized, and so you know, the people who need help most will get help, but I don't want to be that bad off, so I'm going to do everything I can to own my life. And I think when all of those people are clearly focused on personal responsibility, and all the people we're helping are they're being taught to become ready to be personally responsible, then I think we can enter a new age when personal responsibility has made a comeback, and we can give people more choices again.
Okay, I agree that personal responsibility is very important. Everyone should be personally responsible. However, there are certain things that we expect to be able to do in society without dying. And we expect to be able to take our kids to places that are designed for kids without our kids dying. It's just...
Yeah, but... Okay. I'll say one thing, and then I'll let Jay tackle me here. But I just think that you should have a choice, kind of like in Canada, where you can go private health care or public health care. You should be able to ride the government-approved and safety-inspected Ferris wheel, and you should also be able to ride on Fred's Ferris wheel next door that you know might collapse, but you're taking that risk, and it's a whole lot more fun for you because of it. You should have a choice.
Yes, I agree. There's a wide gap between going somewhere and dying and going somewhere and getting hurt. And there is this sort of, you know, and again, I see what kids say, they're so protected. You know, look, Rick and I, you know, we did, I'm sure we played around. We got bloody noses. We got cut, and then we played in the mud and got our cuts infected. You know, now a kid gets cut, the parent takes them home, and it's like they set up triage, and they got, like, you know, 80,000 ointments they're putting on them, and it's just, you know what?
Okay, they do not. Jay, you're not a parent. You can't really talk on this topic.
I've seen it.
Okay,
and as a matter of fact, I saw it as a kid. There was I played soccer, and there was a kid. You know, all of us got hurt. All of us got, you know, took a ball to the face. So, you know, one day I forgot my cup, and then it was an episode of the Benny Hill Show.
Those things still happen today.
I'm not done with the story yet. I sucked it up. Like, there was one kid on my team. Every time the kid would fall, the mother would come running out onto the field.
That's called a helicopter parent. They do exist.
If I was this kid, one, I would be like, Mom, get the F away from me. I'm okay. You're embarrassing me in front of kids. Instead, this kid, like, would play into it. He would fall down, and he would wail and scream, and she would come, oh! And I'm like, and this kid...
Okay. We all know kids like that. Yes, those parents exist, yes, but that is not the majority of the population. Helicopter parents are a small...
Oh, my God.
The population and the
kids, but they're the most vocal, and they're ruining it for the rest of us, because that's the parent that's
no
be
because
like,
no because
Ferris that wheel should be outlawed.
That kid
Somebody
was ostracized. Their
Ferris
that
wheel kid, should be outlawed.
That kid went through his whole school career being ostracized as the wimp, the mama's boy, the one who always cried, the one who always got hurt. He was the one that ended up screwed up and went to university to become a philosopher.
You know, for a minute there, Heather, I thought you were going to take it back towards Jay, and then you fooled me there and went my way. Thank you very much. Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Wow. Jay clearly wasn't that kid, or he wouldn't have been railing against the other kid that was.
No.
You know, there was a scene in the movie Broadcast News, I think it was, with William Hurt and Holly, what's her name? And in their younger days, before the main part of the movie, you know, all the actors were little kids, and this one guy was being beaten up, and the guy who was being beaten up said to his attackers, "You're going to grow up and work with your hands and never make more than $19,000 a year." And after the guys walk away after beating the guy up, he says, "19,000. That's not bad." So everything is relative. Everything is relative.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, as crazy, what was the word you used before? Weird and goofy. As weird and strange, goofy as weird. That rant was, at least it was fun, you know.
Okay.
And there's some validity to it. Yes, there should always be personal responsibility. However, the sad part is, number one, a lot of people are not able to be personally responsible, as we see by, you know, there's a prison population, there are people driving crazy on the roads. Like, some people just can't handle personal responsibility, unfortunately, and I hate to say it. However, they should learn it. Yes, I agree. I don't know if we can help them by putting up roller coasters and Ferris wheels that are about to fall apart at any minute.
They have personal responsibility if they have trouble with the consequences of that personal responsibility.
Yeah, and notice how Heather, wait, I want to make it clear there that I tied Ferris wheels to cap and prioritize, saying that only through cap and prioritize will we return to an era of personal responsibility. So
right.
I just want to get credit for taking Ferris wheels into cap and prioritize.
I understood that, yes, very good.
Yes.
Okay,
thank you.
We're out of time, guys. This has been a fun show. It's been, what, crazy and goofy? Goofy and what?
Silly, goofy, and weird.
Silly, goofy, weird. Yes, it has. Absolutely. It's because it's October. We're blaming it on the fall of Jay. And on behalf of myself, I'm Heather Vail. On behalf of myself, Jay Amernick, and Rick Raddatz, we'll be back with you next week. Maybe we'll be goofy next week. Maybe we won't. You never know what you get on The Political Fix, but we'll catch you next week.
Okay, everybody, the theme to Benny Hill. Something like that.
Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vail Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.